This congregation was formed 52 years ago in 1961, the same year that the Unitarians and the Universalists consolidated into the Unitarian Universalist Association. We first met on the second floor of the Colonial Music Shop on East Patrick Street. Over the years, other locations included the South End Civic Association and the YMCA. As early as 1968, the then UUFF, the UU Fellowship of Frederick, bought 6 acres on Butterfly Lane for a future building. But that property was later sold in favor of searching for an existing building. And then in 1989, this congregation bought the house on 1301 Mater Avenue. You can still find it if you are driving on Mater today. And as the congregation grew beyond the 70-seat capacity of Mater House, we moved to 2 Sunday services there, and then to Rosenstock Hall at Hood College. Finally, 10 years ago, we dedicated this building. And for much of this congregation's history, we've been a semi-nomadic people without a permanent home. And the past 10 years in this building have not always been easy. So when the question arose of whether to celebrate that we're here, that the 10th anniversary of this building dedication has arrived and we're still in it, the answer was a hearty, yes, we should celebrate. It wasn't always clear that we would make it this far, but we're here and as strong and as stable as we've ever been, as the choir sang earlier, hallelujah. And on the occasion of this building's 10th anniversary, I'd like to invite us to reflect on what it might mean for us to practice an intentional spirituality of stability, both here at UUCF and for each of us at home and in our work lives and in our personal lives, a spirituality of stability. Speaking personally, the group that has taught me the most about a spirituality of stability are Benedictine monks. How many of you have ever been to a Benedictine monastery? Okay, very good. I encourage it if you even just stop by sometime if you have an opportunity. During the same years that this congregation was searching for this property, constructing this building, and moving in, I was spending a few weeks each summer visiting intentional communities, such as the Abbey of Gethsemane in Kentucky, where Thomas Merton was just another monk known as Father Louis. Koinonia Farms in Georgia, and the Monastery of Christ in the Desert in New Mexico. And part of why I was drawn to visit that New Mexico monastery in particular is its remoteness. It's at the end of Forest Service Road 151, which the monks affectionately call their 13-mile driveway, a winding, steep, narrow dirt road that for many parts of the year is impassable. And they like it that way. When many people think of monks, they often think of vows such as poverty and chastity, and those vows are no small matters. But what I learned from spending time among Benedictine monks was less about poverty and less about chastity and more about the less famous Benedictine vow of stability, of committing oneself to a lifetime at one monastery on a particular piece of land with a particular community of people. Relatedly, many people associate monasticism with an escape from the world. But every monk I've ever talked to will tell you or complain to you that monks are human beings just like the rest of us. And all the petty annoyances, frailties, and foibles of our fellow human beings are present in monasteries and convents as well, just like everywhere else. The difference, however, is that the monastic ideal at its best includes a commitment to stability, to working out a life of mercy, forgiveness, and compassion, not in the abstract, but with a group of people, the same group of people, week after week, month after month, year after year, decade after decade, in one place for the long haul. I remember after I finished graduate school, got my first full-time job, and discovered unexpectedly after about a year or so that I had saved enough money for a down payment on a house. Keep in mind that housing prices are significantly lower in Northeast Louisiana than in DC Metro. Owning a home was wonderful in many ways, but I was also shocked by the amount of work it took, as all of you homeowners can easily identify with, that it took to keep the house in order, the lawn in order, as well as the amount of money and time required for maintenance. At the same time, there's an intimacy that develops from caring for a piece of land, of building over time, that I never felt toward the apartment that I rented, which not only did I not own, but I had to expend almost no energy to maintain. If there was a problem, I could just call the superintendent. I could make similar analogies to marriage, renting versus buying, dating. Dating versus marriage. Don't read too much into this, people. Renting versus buying, dating versus marriage can be all the difference in the world, in sickness and in health, in plenty and in want, in joy and in sorrow. And yes, I will grant that there are strong arguments for renting in some circumstances, just there are times when divorce is the best option, as difficult and painful as that may be. But on the occasion of the 10th anniversary of this building dedication, I'd like to invite us to reflect on the transformation that can occur from spending a long time in one good place. One minister tells a story of a family joining a congregation that was known to emphasize being a supportive, caring community. This family had relocated specifically to be near this congregation, about which they had heard such wonderful reports from so many different people. But after a year, despite having many significant, good, and welcoming experiences, the father of the family asked for a meeting with one of the ministers and confessed that he wasn't sure he was actually experiencing the community that he had expected and had been told would be available in this congregation. Frankly, they had hoped for more. The minister listened to this man's story and then asked one simple question. "Now remind me, how long have you been a member of this congregation?" And the man answered, "About a year." And the minister replied, "Well, I guess you've got about a year's worth of community. Stay another year and you'll have 2 years' worth. Stay 30 and you may find some of what you're looking for and some of what other people have found and testify about." I was reminded of that story this past week when I was at the monthly gathering of all the UU ministers in the DC metro area. As introductions were being made among the almost 70 ministers in the room, it is significant to be a UU in this area. That's the topic for another sermon, but there's a huge conglomeration of UUs here, and it's really an astounding network and resource. So of those almost 70 ministers in the room, the Reverend Fred Muir, as we went around and introduced ourselves, named that in a few months he will celebrate his 30th anniversary as the minister of the UU Congregation of Annapolis, Maryland. Fred is a well-known and respected minister in Unitarian Universalism on the continental level, and surely he could have easily moved to an allegedly bigger and better congregation at some point, likely at multiple points during the past 30 years. But for whatever confluence of reasons, he stayed. And the stability of Fred's presence has allowed that congregation to grow and take risks for social justice, particularly regarding anti-racism and multiculturalism work that might not otherwise have been possible without his long tenure. So I invite you to begin thinking about parallels in your own life, to things you've committed to over years and decades, people and groups you've committed to, and what becomes possible as trust grows, as you are known and as you know others. Reflecting on Fred's ministry in Annapolis reminded me of two similar stories. The first is from the author Wendell Berry, who, as he became more famous, could easily have moved almost anywhere in the world. But he's chosen a life of stability, farming one particular plot of land in Kentucky. He writes, "During the last 17 years," this is a few years ago when he wrote this, "during the last 17 years, I've been working at the restoration of one exhausted hillside. Its scars are now healed over, though still visible, and this year it has provided an abundant pasture, more than in any year since we have owned it. But to make it as good as it is now has taken 17 years. If I had been a millionaire, if my family had been starving, it still would have taken 17 years. It can be better than it is now, but that will take longer. For it to live fully in its own responsibility as it did before bad use ran it down, may take hundreds of years. The second parallel story is from my friend Kyle Childress, who, like Fred Muir in Annapolis, has committed to a long-term pastorate at a relatively small congregation in Nacogdoches, Texas. Reflecting on the meaning of Wendell Berry's words for him and for his congregation, Kyle writes, "We all have members of our congregation whose lives are deeply scarred. Scarred by bitterness, anger, hurt, abuse, disease, and death. Add to that the deep scarring caused by war, consumer capitalism, nationalism, and racism. For love, mercy, forgiveness, and compassion to grow and heal such worn-out, eroded lives takes patient, detailed work. It takes time to cultivate the traits of peacemaking, forgiveness, reconciliation, and love, where previously violence, mistrust, and fear were the norms. And this morning, I invite you to consider what in your life might be possible through a practice of stability, of a commitment over many decades to a particular group of people, to a particular place. On this 10th anniversary of our building dedication, what community might we build among ourselves, and what difference might this congregation make in the surrounding community over the next 10, 20, or 30 years as this congregation comes to the 20th, 30th, 40th, and beyond anniversary of our building dedication? Our days of renting at the YMCA or Hood College are behind us. The Motter House days of living in a space that someone else built, those are behind us. The memories and the history still shape us, but we're now a full decade into our commitment to this land, to this building, to this surrounding community, and to one another in this place. Talk to any members of our Facilities Management Council. Join them if you'd like. They'd love to have more help. And you'll quickly learn that from spending the last decade here, we know more about this land and this building than we ever expected to know. And many of us know more about one another than we ever expected or maybe wanted to know. Just like those Benedictine monks who thought they were escaping, coming to a place to escape the worries of the world. But there are human beings here, just like everywhere else. That being said, there are new potentialities that open up from spending a long time in one good place, as trust grows and deepens, that aren't possible at first. Consider, for example, this wisdom from some of the desert mothers and fathers who helped inspire St. Benedict of Nursia, who founded the Benedictine order back in the 6th century as the ravages of the Roman Empire were falling apart or had fallen apart. They wrote, "In whatever place you find yourself, do not easily leave it. Do not easily leave it. And if a trail comes upon you in the place where you live, do not leave that place when the trail comes. Wherever you go, you will find what you are running from is ahead of you." Turning to our own day, Jon Kabat-Zinn, who teaches mindfulness-based stress reduction, says it this way in the title of one of his books that I know at least some of you are familiar with. "Wherever you go, there you are." Wherever you go, there you are. And wherever we go, we bring along our issues, our baggage, our neuroses. And although I'll be the first to admit that some places, some people and communities are more toxic than others, that is certainly the case. There are many good people and places out there that are worth spending a long time with. And in our transient, globalized, instant satisfaction age of designed obsolescence, there's a transformative power of committing to a long time in one good place that develops virtues and possibilities that are attractive in that instant gratification, transient culture. And 10 years into our life together in this building is an opportunity to reflect and to recommit to an intentional spirituality of stability and all that it makes possible. And the fruit that can be born out of a spirituality of stability is why I told the search committee that helped bring me here more than a year ago that I have all intentions of staying here at least 7 to 10 years. There's nothing magical about that number. I'm open to staying longer. But, I mean, to be honest with you, I can barely see a decade into the future if I can even really see that far. I certainly can't see beyond that. But I can already say that a little more than a year in, this congregation feels more stable to me than when I arrived. I think I am safe in saying that. It feels more centered, and as we become even more stable, my hope is that we'll be able to reach out more fully and more robustly to the surrounding community from a place of confident stability and steady generosity that will allow us to take informed and ever greater risks for love, for justice, and for mercy. I should add at this point that I can't think of a more appropriate symbol for us to have emblazoned on this land between our congregation, between our sanctuary and between our chapel in this courtyard, the labyrinth. If you haven't spent any time on the labyrinth, I encourage you to do so. There's some instructions on our website, or I can talk to you more about it. Or Irene Jericho, she's not here this morning. I saw from her Facebook post she had a concert last night with her band. She's the one with pink hair, though, so find her. She is our resident labyrinth expert and would love to talk to you about labyrinths. But briefly, contemplative labyrinths like ours don't have a minotaur at the center, and they're not a maze. They're what's called a unicursal design. There's one way in and one way out. And that design in which there is no way to get lost is a beautiful symbol for a spirituality of stability. Walking the labyrinth is an invitation to commit and to recommit each time you walk it to living more deeply and fully into the life that you already have. Sinking more deeply into the life that you already have, just as we're invited to commit ever more fully to our life together in this place. In that vein, allow me to offer just a few brief reflections on what a spirituality of stability might look like for us going forward. The first is to beware grass is greener syndrome. I periodically hear someone lament that our building is not closer to downtown Frederick. I can see the legitimacy of that point. But from the perspective of a spirituality of stability, I invite you to consider that it may not be helpful to rehearse that story. You are, of course, free to express, and I know that you will, no matter what I say, whatever opinions you feel are right. But when I talk to ministers of congregations in downtown Frederick, they have their own set of problems related to traffic, crime, parking, and old buildings needing an incredible amount of repair and not being easily adapted to 21st century technologies. And from a literal perspective, I can guarantee that the grass is not greener in downtown Frederick than it is here. And that for better or worse, we've got way more grass than most of the downtown congregations put together. Talk to anyone who volunteers to mow the grass here. We also have a more pastoral, retreat-like setting that is not possible in a crowded downtown that provides a much-desired change of pace and energy for many members and friends of this congregation. Historically speaking, as many of you likely read in the special edition of The Unison, it's posted on our website if you haven't read it. It was emailed out last week. 10 years ago, 101 properties were investigated before building seemed like the best option. And finally, a breakthrough. We found a 6-acre vacant parcel near Route 340. This land had been earlier approved for a church that was never constructed, and it was for sale. What a promising location for a new building. 2 turns from an exit on a major highway fit the suggested location requirements for the UUA. We UUs love nature, as I said earlier about this painting. But as you visit some of these UU congregations around DC Metro, especially some that were built decades ago, what many of them had said the mistake they made was loving nature too much. They built their congregations in the woods. They're really hard to find. Many UU congregations are camouflaged because they're hidden in trees. So this really is one of the most beautiful buildings, new buildings in Unitarian Universalism. It's visible from the highway, and it's very striking. And after an exhaustive search, this congregation bought this property on which we are sitting, which clearly seemed the best at the time. And a spirituality of stability invites us to let go of any grass is greener approach and commit to a robust life together in this place that we chose for ourselves. And maybe some distant day this congregation will relocate again. I cannot see that far in the future. But my suspicion is that for the foreseeable future, we're far from done with this land and this building and all that it makes possible. And I suspect it's not done with us yet either. Second, celebrating the 10th anniversary of the building dedication makes me profoundly grateful to everyone who contributed time, donations, and energy in getting us this far. During the reception after the service, I invite you to notice the plaques in the atrium. Some of them are on the left. Immediately as you go out, we've added ribbons to draw attention to them for this anniversary celebration. They honor everyone who made contributions to the capital campaign, to our mortgage reduction campaign a few years later. As you walk out the front door, look down into your left or down into your right as you come back in next time. Notice our cornerstone, which recognizes some of the donors who made a large initial contribution to make this building possible. At the same time, the invitation of this 10th anniversary of the building is at least as much about the future as it is about the past. We're here not only to honor the generosity and commitment of those who were here 10 years ago, but to reaffirm our collective commitment now and in the future. 10 years later, we still owe a little more than $1 million on this building. I think that's important to say out loud occasionally. And our mortgage is a significant percentage of our annual budget. We're already doing a lot here at UUCF, a stunning amount, I sometimes think, to promote liberal religious values in this area. But there is so much more that will become possible when this building is paid off. If any of you have a spare million sitting around, come and talk to me. I'm interested. In the near future, we have a bridge to build between our operating budget and the special pledge drive that helped bring me here and return this congregation from half-time to having a full-time minister. We're now early in the second year of that 3-year period that pledge drive funded, and I'm incredibly grateful to those of you who made pledges for that 3-year period. And in the next few months, the stewardship committee will be contacting everyone who's made second and third year pledges to see how many of us will be willing to continue to give at or near that level even when the 3-year period is over, which will indicate the new regular revenue that we'll need to be generating starting around mid-2015. Now's the time to be thinking about that, not the crisis point of fall 2015. Hopefully the non-crisis point, right? The good news is that this congregation has a history of being generous in special giving to construct this building, to bring me here as a full-time minister. And from the perspective of a spirituality of stability, however, I invite you to consider that a growing edge for this congregation is a more robust, regular giving base. You probably, you know, those of you, you know who I'm talking about, right? No. What I mean is that the growth area is a challenge not only for us, but also for far too many UU congregations in this country. Indeed, a sermon delivered to the delegates at this past year's UU General Assembly, Reverend Vanessa Southern proclaimed rightly that big missions don't happen on starvation budgets. And on average, last time I checked, she said, UUs as a whole, across the country, give 1.5% of our incomes to our congregations. To which she added, really? That's not worthy of us, she said. We need to stop pretending that we're just people who are really careful with our money. We need to get crazy generous. Now, as some of you have heard me joke before, I'm not saying you need to tithe 10% of your income to this congregation. I'm not tied to that biblical 10%. Give 11%. Give 9%. I'm flexible. No. In all seriousness, we absolutely value your time, your energy, your presence as much as your financial contributions. And you know whether, and that's what I meant by you know who I'm talking to, you know whether you're in a position to give more or if you're really not. But consider the value that you receive from this place. I mean, that's really the question. Do you receive value from this place or not and from these people? I value liberal religious values, freedom, bringing reason and applying it to religion, diversity, social and environmental justice. I believe that this place amplifies, embodies, and enacts those values in a way far beyond what is possible for any of us to do alone. And if you too perceive value in this place and have the means to do so, I invite you to consider talking to me or talking to our treasurer about making a recurring financial pledge to this congregation. So when you make those, you know, let us know this is what I'm going to be giving monthly. That helps us plan accordingly about what's possible. When can we move our DRE to full time? When can we move our music director to half time? When can we, you know, do what we need to do to paint the building? That it makes a difference in what we're able to do. Or if you're already a regular donor and have the means, consider doubling what you give to this congregation. Yes, that's what I said. Consider doubling what you give. I ask only because I know that this building is here, that I am here, only because members and friends of this congregation in the past have been crazy generous. But now it's our turn to take the baton and take it the next step. As I once heard a speaker say, progressive religious communities make a mistake in calling themselves nonprofits. We need to start seeing ourselves as social profit organizations. We invite you to invest your money, time, and energy in this place because we bring social profit to this community. We make a difference in how people are together, in how justice and equity and compassion and diversity are enacted and lived in this world. And we have the potential to do so much more than the significant work that we're already doing. And in the spirit of how much is possible by committing to a long time in one good place, I'll conclude with this pledge that is adapted from one used in a congregation in Ohio that they use to help describe how each person contributes to what a place is over time. My congregation is composed of people like me. I help make it what it is. It will be friendly if I am. It will be kind, forgiving, and welcoming if I am. Its seats will be filled if I help fill them. It will do great work if I work. It will make generous gifts to many causes if I am a generous giver. It will bring others into its worship if I invite them and bring them. It will be a congregation of loyalty and love, of fearlessness and faith, of compassion, charity, and mercy if I make it what it is and am filled with these things. Therefore, I dedicate myself to the task of being all those things that I want my spiritual home to be. I look forward to the 20th anniversary of our building dedication and all that will come between now and then. And from that distant vantage point, I hope we can look back at the year 2013 and say, that is when this congregation became crazy generous. Generous of heart, generous of wealth, generous of spirit. May it be so, and blessed be.